If you read the New Testament regularly, and maybe not so regularly, you'll notice that from time to time, you'll come across a long list of sins, or sometimes they're called vices, and maybe a list of virtues. For example, I happen to be in Romans chapter 13. Look at what Paul says in verses 13 and 14. Let us behave properly as in the day. And then there's this list of sins or list of vices. Not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy. And so he's put together a list of sins or vices there, and he's done it a certain way in this passage. He's kind of put them together in pairs. And so there's carousing and drunkenness and sexual promiscuity and sensuality and strife and jealousy. But put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lusts. Now, that's just one example. You come across these lists fairly often as you read through the New Testament. Some of them are short like this one, but others are rather lengthy. You'll find lists, for example, in the Gospels, in the Romans. You'll see another one in the book of Romans in a minute. In 1 and 2 Corinthians, Galatians has its lists of vices and virtues. Ephesians, Colossians, 2 Timothy, Revelation. Some of them are well known. For example, the works of the flesh, Galatians chapter 5. Long list, or fairly lengthy list of sins that Paul identifies as works of the flesh. And so some of them are lengthy or well known. And the fruit of the Spirit likewise is well known. And some of these lists are less well known. Sometimes the list of vices is balanced with a list of virtues. And so that's what you have, for example, in Galatians chapter 5. You have the works of the flesh, fornication, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, and so forth. And that list is balanced with a list of the characteristics of the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, and so forth. And we find that sort of arrangement again, for example, in the book of Colossians. Put off the old man with his doings, and then a rather lengthy list of vices that are characteristic of the old man, and put on the new man, and a list of characteristics that apply to the new man, the man that is remade in Christ. In Ephesians chapter 4, Paul has a list of vices and virtues, and in this list, he combines the two, the vices and the virtues, he combines them together in a series of balanced statements. For example, he says in verse 25, therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and yet do not sin. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather labor. And so don't steal, that would be a vice. Do the good thing, work with your hands. Don't tell lies, there's the vice, but the virtue is speak the truth. And so in Ephesians, he sort of mixes them up in this series of balanced statements. Sometimes we find only a list of vices without the balancing list of virtues. For example, Romans chapter 1 and verse 28, they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer. God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things that are not proper. Being filled with all, here's the list, unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, and so forth. And in this passage, you just have a list of vices that were characteristic of the Gentile world, the ancient Gentile world. And of course, implicit in that is a warning to us not to engage in those things ourselves. There are 21 vices mentioned here, Romans 1, verses 28 and following. Find another list in 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 5. 19 vices are mentioned there. And it's not just found in the writings of Paul. We find Peter has his own set of lists. For example, 1 Peter chapter 4, a rather short list of vices. And then a well-known list over in the book of 2 Peter, beginning in chapter 1, beginning in verse 5. For this reason also, supplying all diligence in your faith, supply virtue, in your virtue, knowledge, and in your knowledge, self-control, perseverance. And so, This is not an uncommon thing to come across these lists of vices and virtue. We find one even in Jesus' teaching in Matthew chapter 15, where Jesus says, this is verse 19, "For out of the heart come," here's the list, "evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and slanders. These are the things," he says, "which defile the man." John has his list in the book of Revelation. We won't take the time to look at that. Well, I got to thinking about these lists that we come across from time to time, especially what are called the vice lists, these lists of sins that are characteristic of the world outside of Christ, or the world without God, or the unregenerate world, we might say. And I began to notice that some of the things mentioned in the list are mentioned in more than one list. And so we might have a particular vice that's mentioned in Romans chapter 1, and then we find it again in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and we might find it again in the book of Colossians. Now, a lot of these vices are mentioned only once in one list, but some of them are mentioned a number of times, some of them in almost every list. Now, what does that tell us? Well, just think about the people to whom these letters are written. You have Jesus teaching in Palestine. You have Paul writing to people in Ephesus and Colossae. And then you have Paul writing to people over in Rome. You have Paul writing to people in Corinth. And if Jesus is warning about things to people in Palestine, and Paul is warning people in Asia Minor, and then in Rome and Corinth, that would suggest that the things that are mentioned several times in the various lists, those are problems that are common to people. And so they're dangers to people in Palestine, to the Jews in Palestine. They're dangers to the people and Christians in Asia Minor. They're dangers to people over in Corinth and Rome as well. These are common problems. And so what I thought we might do is just take a look at some of the things that are mentioned in these lists that are repeated from list to list, and just try to emphasize those and see if we can't learn something from them. You can kind of break down these lists and systematically or statistically. I didn't look at every list. There are lots of them in the New Testament. But the ones I looked at, there are 106 different vices named in these lists. There are 55 separate vices named. And so you can see some of them are named in different lists. And so some of them are repeated from one list to the other, or to another. 17 vices are sort of general in nature. That's the sort of the character of these. These would include warnings against being wicked. That's pretty general. That covers a lot of territory, doesn't it? Or being unholy, or don't be evil, or the ancient world, that they're haters of God. And so those are rather general warnings or general characteristics. Some of them, however, are more specific. Other vices include sorcery. And so that's mentioned twice in these lists. Or idolatry or murder even in these lists a couple of times. Being disobedient to parents or being brutal. Like I said, some of them are mentioned only once in the list. However, others are quite common. And so 7 times in these lists we find warnings against drunkenness, or people are identified as drunkards. And so that would indicate that this is a fairly common problem among people. And there are warnings against materialism or greed or covetousness. And so that's mentioned various times in a number of different lists. The most commonly mentioned vices are warnings against or statements concerning divisiveness. 10 warnings against divisiveness. And so if our assumption is correct that the things that are mentioned most often and mentioned from list to list are things that pose real dangers and real threats, divisiveness, that's a problem. We need to be on guard against that. We need to be aware of that. That we don't contribute to divisiveness among God's people. Now sometimes you'll find 3 or 4 vices that have to do with the same sort of thing, like you might find in Galatians chapter 5 warnings against strife and dividing up into parties and dissensions. And so those 3 would be included in the 10, although they're in the same list. There's 16 warnings that involve attitudes like envy, jealousy, anger, arrogance, bitterness, malice. Having the wrong attitude is a problem. That's a problem for us, isn't it? Developing the wrong attitude, developing bitterness, or being angry, or being arrogant. There are 17 warnings against sexual vices. A warning against sexual misbehavior is found in almost all of these lists. And so it doesn't matter whether it's Jesus in Matthew chapter 15, or what Paul says to the Romans, or to the Corinthians, or to the Galatians. So even though those cities are not in the same, not near each other, Paul is saying, watch out for this. This is a real danger for us. It's a danger for us today as well. But the most commonly warned against vice has to do with inappropriate speech. In the list that I look at, and I'm not claiming that I've looked at every list like this in the New Testament, and of course a lot of teaching that's done, not in this form, not in this way, but just looking at these various vice lists that we find in the New Testament, over and over again, we are being warned about inappropriate speech. Well, that tells me this is a problem. This is a problem for us. It's not just a problem for the world out there, although it certainly is a problem for them, but it's also a problem for us. And there are several different kinds of inappropriate speech that are mentioned in these lists. And that's really what we're going to draw from in the time that we have left today. And so let's just look at some of the things that we're warned against from these lists that we find in the New Testament that have to do with inappropriate speech. And so you might think, well, you've taken a long time to get to your point, but I've been making lots of points along the way. Okay. For example, in the book of Colossians chapter 3 and verse 9, Paul says that we are to put off the old man with his doing and put off certain characteristics like lying. Verse 9, do not lie to one another since you have laid aside the old man, the old self, with its evil practices. Don't lie to each other. You see it again in the book of Ephesians, in the statement that I looked at just a moment ago. Don't speak falsehood. Lay aside falsehood and speak the truth, each one with his neighbor. That's Ephesians chapter 4. Revelation 21 and verse 8 tells us that all liars will have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. We know that passage. But for the cowardly and unbelieving, abominable, murderers, immoral persons, sorcerers and idolaters, and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. So let's talk about lying for just a moment. That's a problem in the world. It's a problem for us as well. Lying is the deliberate attempt to mislead or deceive someone, as opposed to just being mistaken. And so you might ask me a question. I might give you incorrect information, but I might just be mistaken. We wouldn't call that lying. He's just made a mistake. But lying is the deliberate attempt to mislead someone, or to lead them in the wrong direction, or to have them draw an incorrect conclusion. And lying may take several forms. A person may say something is true when it's false, knowingly and deliberately say this is when it is not. This is true when it's false. He may say something is false when it's true. A person may misrepresent or distort the facts, and he's doing it intentionally so that he might deceive the one that he's communicating with. And so he distorts the facts or misrepresents the facts. He knows them better. He may deliberately give incorrect information. A person may deliberately mislead someone by withholding important information. A person might just not know everything or he might just, from lack of memory, omit some important information. But when he does it deliberately with the intent to deceive, well, he's lying. A person might tell what is technically true, but he does so in a way that he misleads the person he's communicating with. He's lying. A person may tell what is only partially true. We call that the half-truth. What he's saying is true, but it's only partially true. A good illustration of that from the Bible, I think, is Satan when he's talking with Eve in the Garden of Gethsemane. Well, God knows that, your eyes are going to be open and you're going to be like God. And so, just eat this fruit.
Well, were their eyes open when they ate it? Yeah, they sure were. Did they know good and evil? Yeah, they sure did. They knew that they were guilty. They knew that they had done evil. And so what he was saying is, there's some element of truth in it, but he's really misleading them. He's deceiving them. He's telling them what is half true. And it's the half truth that's the worst and most dangerous kind of lie. Well, there are a lot of examples of lying in the New Tower in the Bible. We've noticed the first one when Satan deceived Eve. And the New Testament indicates that he deceived her in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 14 and 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3. And people have been lying ever since, haven't they? And so you got Satan deceiving the woman, deceiving Eve, introducing this particular sin into the world, and people have been doing it ever since. Abraham and Sarah lied in Egypt when they said Sarah was Abraham's sister and concealed the fact. This was an intent to deceive and mislead. And there's some truth in the statement. She was indeed his half-sister, but they're really trying to mislead and conceal the fact that Sarah was his wife. Isaac, his son, later commits the same error, which in his case was just an outright lie. Jacob and Rachel deceive Isaac by leading him to believe that Jacob was Esau, so that Jacob might receive his father's blessing. Remember, they put the wool on his arms, and they've deceived him. And in fact, he claims to be Esau. In Genesis 27, verse 19, "I am Esau," Isaac says, or Jacob says, "your firstborn." Jacob's sons deceive Jacob. You remember, his sons deceive him by presenting Joseph's coat dipped in goat's blood. Well, is your brother out? Well, is this his coat? They don't come out and say what they did, or, you know, is this his coat? Yeah, I guess he's been killed. They deceive him. Although their words might not have been false, technically, they've deceived him, intentionally so. And David attempted to deceive Uriah when David had committed adultery with Bathsheba in 2 Samuel chapter 12. And so there are lots of examples of people lying in the Bible. In the Old Testament, idols are referred to as lies. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie. That is, they no longer worship the Creator, but they serve the creature in the form of a carved image, an animal, a four-footed beast, a creeping thing. And so the idol is the lie. It's identified as a lie. False prophets and false teachers are identified as liars in the Bible. I got to thinking about this. How often do people lie? I read one article that says the title of it, "People Can't Go 10 Minutes Without Lying." That's pretty sad commentary on the state of affairs, isn't it? Some research indicates that we lie at least once a day. That's just people in general. Hope it's not true of us. But people lie in general at least once a day about all kinds of things. Some of the things we lie about are important things. But you know what the bad thing is? Sometimes we lie about unimportant things. And sometimes people will lie when it's just as easy to tell the truth, and maybe even better to tell the truth. Sometimes people will tell a lie. It's that ingrained in their character. We lie to make ourselves look better. We lie to get out of difficult situations, to avoid hurting other people's feelings. We lie to strangers, to friends, to family members, parents, spouses. I read one article that suggested that 90% of the people who go on dating websites lie about themselves. 90%. And so they're lying about, you know, their appearance or their achievements or something like that. We lie to teachers, police officers, our bosses, preachers and elders sometimes. The worst part is, and I don't know if it's, maybe I shouldn't say the worst, but one of the tragic parts about our lying is we lie to ourselves sometimes. Remember Galatians chapter 3, chapter 6, verse 3? If anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. If you think you're something when you're nothing, Paul says we deceive ourselves. We lie in ordinary conversation. We lie on resumes, tax returns, tests. We lie on tests. When I put down an answer that's not really mine, that I've gotten from, You know, the guy sitting next to me or the person sitting in front of me, when I look on his paper and I'm cheating on the test, I'm lying. I'm telling the teacher this is my answer when it's really not my answer at all. Or I'm telling the teacher that I know this material when I really don't know it at all. We lie in interviews and all kinds of things. We lie about what we know, what we've said, what we've done, our abilities and achievements. One article suggested that lying starts early. By the time a child is 3 years old, he knows how to lie. And by the time he's 6 years old, most children do it regularly, according to this article. Where do they pick that up from? Well, it might just kind of come natural when children figure out that I can get out of trouble if I don't tell the truth. But what the article suggested is sometimes children learn it from their parents. When their parents say something like, just tell grandmother you'd like those socks that she gave. Just tell her that you like them. When really the child doesn't. We're teaching them to not to be truthful. In Romans chapter 3, Paul describes really the condition of all of us. He says in verse 9, what then, are we the Jews better than they the Gentiles? No, not at all. We've already charged that both Jews and Gentiles are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, not even one. There is none that understands. There is none who seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become useless. And then later he says that in verse 13, with their tongues they keep deceiving. God condemns lying from the very beginning. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Among the six things, or the seven things that the Lord hates, lying is mentioned twice. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 17, a lying tongue. People who are lied to are hurt by it. You ever been lied to and later come to realize that someone that you trusted or a friend has been lying to you? That hurts, doesn't it? That hurts. So lying hurts the people that are lied to. Even people in the world are offended by it. You know, lying is just one of those things. Even though a lot of people engage in it, lying is one of those things that even people in the world will say they just won't stand for. God is a God of truth. God cannot lie. And He demands His people be truth tellers as well. Let's lay aside all falsehood and speak the truth with each other. Well, also in these lists, we find warnings against being boastful. And so look at Romans chapter 1 and verse 30, for example. Without people are slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful. Find it also 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2. There are warnings in the Bible, Romans 12 verse 3, against thinking too highly of ourselves. And so that's Romans 12 verse 3. He says, I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think. And so we shouldn't be thinking highly of ourselves. In Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 17, again, among those six things that the Lord hates, haughty eyes. Boasting is an indication that we think more highly of ourselves than we ought. It's a reflection of a proud heart and the very opposite of what God desires to see in us. Colossians 3 verse 12 says that we are to put on a heart of compassion, kindness, and humility. Philippians 2 tells us that we ought to follow in the example of Christ who humbled himself and became obedient. We remember the story of Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 4 as one day as he was walking in his palace and just admiring all the buildings that he had built and everything he accomplished. He just says, you know, look at everything that I've done. Verse 30 of Daniel chapter 4. Is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power and for the glory of my majesty? Well, soon he was humbled and he was lowered to the condition of a beast. And so God resists the proud, he says, but he gives grace to the humble. We live in boastful times, don't we? You ever watch a football game and a guy, he's got the ball and he runs and he scores a touchdown? Not all players do this, but you know, beat him. And I've seen him do like this, you know, pointing at his name on the back of his jersey. Look at me. Look at what I've done. Now, again, not all players do that, but there's plenty of that, isn't there? Well, he's forgot the coach that called the play. He's forgotten about the quarterback that got him the ball. He's forgotten about the blockers that blocked for him. Now, some players will give credit to all those people, but there's plenty of that boasting going around, isn't there? Everyone seems to be advancing themselves and their own agenda. We live in a nation that has forgotten God, that relies upon our own power and our own might and our own strength and our own wisdom. We're like Tyre was in Ezekiel chapter 28, because your heart is lifted up and you have said, I am God. I sit in the seat of gods, in the heart of the seas. Yet you are a man and not God, and I'm going to bring you down. So we need to be careful of that as a nation, but as individuals as well. Paul says, if we're going to boast, we need to be boasting in the Lord. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 17, he who boasts is to boast in the Lord. And Galatians chapter 6 tells us that we are to boast in the cross of Christ. Again, we need to develop the attitude that Paul had. By the grace of God, I am what I am. By God's grace, I am and I have what I am and what I have. Did not every good and perfect gift come to us from God? So we boast in God, and we boast in Christ, and we boast in the cross, if we're going to boast at all. Well, also in these lists, we find warnings against slander. And so there's falsehood, there's being boastful, there's slander. Slander is to speak against or to defame someone. It's to injure their reputation or to revile them. Now, there's a difference between slander and legitimate criticism. And so we might legitimately criticize others. You know, we need to do it in the right way, of course. Or might criticize the world around us, whatever. There's a difference between legitimate criticism and slander. Slander is spoken with the intent to harm someone, or at least to harm their reputation. Legitimate criticism isn't made with that intent. In fact, I might criticize someone, or someone might criticize me, really just trying to help me. But with slander, we're criticizing others with the intent to do them harm or to hurt them, or at least hurt their reputation in some way. Paul says that his opponents were slandering him by saying that Paul preached, let us do evil that good might come. They were seeking to do damage to his reputation and his influence. We might not consider it an especially evil thing to slander or speak against someone, but if people are known by the company they keep, we can say the same thing about words. Words are known by the company they keep. So look at the company that slander keeps. In Romans chapter 1, people are filled with unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They're gossips, slanderers, haters of God. Now, slander is a sin that we need to avoid. A lot of times in the text, it's associated with anger, and we can see how one leads to the other. We become angry with someone, and so we seek to do them harm. We want to take some sort of vengeance or seek revenge by hurting them, hurting their reputation. And so we begin to slander them. There are a couple of areas where we need to watch what we say about others. A lot of these lists are written to Christians about other Christians. And so be careful how you speak about each other. And so in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, for example, Paul is anticipating a trip to Corinth and wants to spend some time with them. And he says, you know, I'm afraid that when I get there, I'm not going to find things the way that I would like for them to be. There may be strife and jealousy, angry tempers, disputes, slanders. We know that the church at Corinth was having some internal problems. And so Paul says, I'm afraid when I get there, I'm going to find you slandering each other. We need to be careful not to speak against one another. James chapter 4 and verse 11. Why would we do that? Why would we slander each other? Well, you know, if we work closely together over a long period of time about things that we have strong feelings for, and we disagree or we irritate one another, yeah, that slander could happen, couldn't it? And so we get on each other's nerves, or in some way we rub each other the wrong way.
And we begin to slander each other. And these things you shouldn't be. Here's another area where we need to watch what we say. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17 tells us to honor the king. All right? Now, we don't have a king, but we have a president, and we have a governor, and we have a vice president, we have a lieutenant governor. We need to show them honor because they occupy that particular position. But sometimes we might find ourselves slandering those who rule over us because of the decisions that they make. And frankly, decisions are being made which we find appalling. But the Bible tells us to honor them. Peter lived under a government that was hostile toward him, as did Paul. And yet both of them tell us to have respect for those who occupy positions of governmental power. And so we need not revile them or speak about them in a disrespectful way. That doesn't mean agree with all their policies. We may even be critical of them sometimes. But we must not cross the line to slander. What Paul says in Ephesians 4, verse 29, is that our speech should be good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that we will give grace to those who hear. And so we want to build each other up, not slander each other. And we want to give each other grace and not tear each other down. And Paul says, I'm afraid that perhaps when I come, this is that 2 Corinthians 12, 20 passage, I'm afraid that perhaps when I come, I may find you to be not what I wish, that perhaps there will be strife, jealousy, slanders, and gossip. Uh-oh, just saw some heads perk up. Gossip. You know, the Greek word gossip is an interesting word, or word translated gossip. It's one of those onomatopoetic words, you know, like bang. You know, the word bang sounds like a bang. Or hiss. Well, the word hiss sounds like a hiss. And the word for gossip sounds like psst. Starts with that sound. Psst, psst. That's the way we gossip, isn't it? Hey, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. I want to tell you something about Cherry Bailey. You know, and, you know, the King James Version, I think, uses the word whisper. A whisperer. Or a gossip. I'm not quite sure which one is more enjoyable, to tell the gossip or to hear the gossip. But it seems to me that with each new advance in communication technology, the ability to gossip increases. You know, in the olden days, you just had to, all you could do was just tell somebody, just word of mouth. And then they invented movable type, and you could write your gossip and put it in the newspaper, have a gossip column. And some newspapers trade entirely on gossip, celebrity gossip. And then we got the telephone, and now with the internet, we can gossip at the speed of light. Oh, wait, but you can't get any better than that, can you? I can gossip at the speed of light, and I can tell somebody on other part of the world my little juicy piece of gossip. What's wrong with gossip? Well, it's often untrue. We played that game where we whisper in somebody's ear, you know, some information, and it goes around the room, you know, one whispers to the next, and by the time it gets over here, it bears no resemblance to the original statement. You know, gossip is untrue. And often harmful because it's told to expose a defect in someone's character. That's what makes it juicy, isn't it? That I'm telling you about Jerry Bailey and a defect in his character. Let me tell you about Jerry. You know, he did this, he said that. And so if we're not careful, when we gossip, we're also guilty of lying and slander. And so we need to be careful. When we cross the line into gossip, when we hear or tell something because it appeals to the baser elements of our nature, whatever those are, you know, we have those elements in our nature that just delight in hearing that kind of stuff. And when those elements are aroused in us, we need to stop. We need to stop telling and stop listening. So, before we tell or write a thing, before we hit send, we need to think about our motives. Why am I sending this? Why am I telling this? And if it's just idle gossip, if it's just useless gossip, well, just don't tell it. And then the last thing we'll talk about is this passage, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification. That's Ephesians 4, verse 29. See a similar statement in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 8.
In the Ephesians passage, we read about unwholesome speech or unwholesome talk or corrupting talk. It's actually the word that's used for rotten food or rotten fruit. And so don't, I mean, so like going out to the compost pile, you know, where you put all your old food and it's rotting out there. You're going to use it for fertilizer. And that's what comes out of our mouth sometimes. And then the word in Colossians has to do with what is shameful or ugly or dishonorable or obscene. And so we might combine those ideas and say whatever is obscene, profane, corrupt, dishonorable, or filthy should not be spoken by a Christian. Look at Paul. What Paul says, Ephesians 5, verse 3. But immorality or impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. And there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. The use of profane language is pervasive in our culture. I think maybe at one time people hesitated to use profanity in public, but now it's common to hear it, especially in some parts of the world, especially in some parts of our nation. A couple of years ago, Andrew was out of town. He's kind of up in the Northeast, and I asked him, well, what are things like up there? He said, Dad, you should hear him talk. Oh, lots of profanity, huh? He said, well, it's not so much that they're using a lot of profane words. It's the same word over and over and over and over. Well, it's just that's one part of the country, but it's pervasive in our part of the country as well. I'm sure television has something to do with this, though the television producers would say, we're only reflecting what's out of there in the world, you know. And I imagine children a lot of times just learn it from their parents. They just repeat what they've heard their parents say. On this subject, the world accepts some is okay, some profanity is even good at times. When you really want to make a strong point, or you're just mad, or you just want to, you know, a little bit's okay, just not too much. But notice the biblical standard. Let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth. And so we need to be careful what we say and how we talk. And I would suggest, and maybe I'm getting over into the area of opinion, I'm not quite sure, but not only has the rate of profanity increased, but we become a cruder and more common culture in our language. When I say common, I mean what is unrefined and vulgar. When I was growing up in our house, and I don't know that we were particularly sophisticated, but there's just some words we didn't say, they were just common. And that's kind of the way my mother would say it. It's just common. It's vulgar. It's unrefined. And we've lowered our standard in that area as well, when we need to be raising the standard and setting the example. And so I would just remind us of what Paul says in Philippians 4 and verse 8. Whatever is honorable and lovely and good and excellent, think on these things, and those things will be exhibited in our language as well. Well, we've filled our time and more, as usual, of course. But you know, speech is one area where we can distinguish ourselves from the world very quickly and very easily. People will notice quickly that we don't use a certain kind of language, or we don't tell lies, or we don't spread gossip, or those kinds. Or we don't slander other people. And they'll see that light. That's just an opportunity for us to shine the light of Christ in a dark world. And so I would just encourage us just to be careful what we say and to make sure that our words are always wholesome and always good for edifying and building up and not for tearing down. If you're here today and you're not a Christian, you want to give you an opportunity to respond to the invitation to confess your faith in Jesus Christ. And if you've repented of your sins, you can be baptized into the body of Christ this morning. If you're already a Christian but not faithful, maybe unfaithful in this very area, let's think about that. Repent of your sin, confess it to God, and He'll forgive. If we can help you in some way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.